The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today is Wednesday, March 29th, 2023, and here is the noteworthy news that you have to know. But first, you know the drill. Please hit the subscribe button below and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Julie R. Hartman. Also, be sure to check out my Timeless playlist. That is my Timeless episodes that I'm going to be posting separately from these episodes, which are just news. Just a quick note on why I am doing this separation. I think that there are two primary problems in this country. There are probably a lot more, but at least the two primary ones that I see is that on the one hand, Americans are not exposed to the right facts about the news and about politics. So our images or understandings of things are very distorted. So that's why in these news segments, I want to give you a fact-rich analysis and do the work of understanding and impart it to you so that you don't have to. But also, what's so important to me as a broadcaster is to also do those Timeless episodes where I talk about non-political subjects. Those of you who have been watching them know that I talk about owls, good music, famous paintings, moral issues, and even the episode that is dropping today is about handwriting analysis. I interview Dr. Mark Seifer, who analyzes Hitler's handwriting, my handwriting, Sean's handwriting. Didn't think I would put those three in the same sentence, but you get the drill. You should watch those Timeless shows because I'm trying to both inform you and fulfill you. Going on to the first news story of the day, Sam Bankman-Fried, the cryptocurrency fraudster, has been accused of bribing Chinese officials. U.S. prosecutors alleged that in 2021, SBF bribed one or more Chinese officials with at least $40 million in cryptocurrency in order to gain access to more than $1 billion in cryptocurrency that the Chinese government froze. As I was reading about this story in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, I couldn't help but notice that none of those publications explained or did a good job of explaining why SBF was doing business with the Chinese in the first place. The best answer that I can give you is that China has some pretty large banks, and it also has exchanges where people can trade things, just like the New York Stock Exchange is a U.S. exchange. So I would assume that Sam Bankman-Fried has had his cryptocurrency tokens, which were called FTTs, or other cryptocurrencies listed on Chinese exchanges. The Chinese would want someone like Sam Bankman-Fried to bring his crypto on their exchange because people in China want to get into those this crypto world. People in America want to get into this crypto world. They view it as the future. So, also, people are wondering why the Chinese would freeze these cryptocurrencies. Again, $1 billion in cryptocurrency that the Chinese government froze. My cynical, but probably pretty accurate and realistic answer is that the Chinese knew that they could probably get a bribe from someone like Sam Bankman-Fried. And if U.S. prosecutors are correct, then China was right about that. U.S. prosecutors allege that certain accounts were unfrozen precisely when Sam Bankman-Fried directed his Alameda employees to make the first payment, the first bribe to these Chinese officials. By the way, as background, Sam Bankman-Fried had two firms. The first one was called Alameda Research, which was a cryptocurrency investment firm. And then he had FTX, which, of course, was the firm that people like Tom Brady advertised at the Super Bowl. And that was a trading firm where everyday people could put their money into FTX. And Sam Bankman-Fried, and his team would trade it in cryptocurrency. If this is true, that Sam Bankman-Fried bribed Chinese officials to unfreeze cryptocurrency assets, then this is a blatant violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. That was a statute that was passed in 1977, and it makes it illegal for U.S. businesses to bribe foreign government officials. It should be obvious to us why the U.S. government would pass such a law, but just in case it is not, they want a free and fair market for American businessmen and women to compete in. And obviously, needless to say, if you are bribing foreign governments, then that is not a free and fair market. Also, it can jeopardize the goodness of the product. If a foreign government is taking bribes or is subsidizing an American product, then that product may not be safe and a good product. And finally, obviously, bribing foreign governments can lead to extreme national security issues, where a foreign government like China can blackmail certain American businesses, and it can cause those business owners to exchange potentially sensitive information that would undermine American national security. Sam Bankman-Fried, though, starting in November of 2022, has already been charged with many violations of the law, not just this Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. He was charged with fraud, money laundering, and violating campaign finance law. He made massive donations worth $40 million to overwhelmingly Democratic politicians. But then what about $2 or $3 million of that $40 million mysteriously also went to Republican Mitch McConnell? But again, it seems as though he was violating campaign finance law with his extremely generous donations. Also, he was engaging in shady, corrupt business practices. For instance, he made his girlfriend the head of Alameda Research while he was running FTX. The two companies shared an office space and had access to each other's sensitive information, which obviously helped facilitate the self-dealing, because one of the things that Sam Bankman-Fried was accused of was taking FTX funds to pay off Alameda employees and depositors. And maybe the most shocking is that neither company had any outsiders, that is, non-owners or non-employees, on its board of directors. The board of directors is very important for companies because it is the most powerful and crucial in-house watchdog. This coming October, Sam Bankman-Fried will go on trial for all of these charges, and he could face decades in prison. I actually reported first on the Sam Bankman-Fried story during the first weeks of this show, and I decided to dig up some clips from the archives of interviews that Sam Bankman-Fried gave specifically to ABC News' George Stephanopoulos, where he denied doing any wrong. Let's listen.
So you do know, and you did know, that FTX deposits were being funneled to Alameda.
So I was vaguely aware that that was how some wires were being sent in the first place.
Didn't that set off alarm bells in your head?
So there are a lot of people who are involved in that process. And look, I really deeply wish that I had taken, like, a lot more responsibility for understanding what the details were of what was going on there.
Okay, that clip, he actually does acknowledge that he was wrongly transferring FTX funds to Alameda Research. The first clip that I meant to play was when earlier in the interview, he actually denied it. And then you just saw subsequently in the interview, he admitted to it. So let's watch the clip of him denying it.
Did you know that FTX deposits were used to pay off Alameda creditors?
I don't know of FTX deposits being used to pay off Alameda creditors.
It's amazing that within a span of just 2 minutes, he can deny and then turn back on it. And look at the way he gets so nervous and flustered when George Stephanopoulos presses him. This is a guy who was on the cover of Forbes and Fortune and other prominent American financial magazines. He was a keynote speaker even after his fraud was exposed at the New York Times' Deal Book Summit. And again, big celebrities like Tom Brady, even in a Super Bowl commercial, advertised FTX, although it has come out that many of these celebrities, including Mr. Brady, actually was not a customer of FTX. He was just paid to advertise it. This example of Sam Bankman-Fried paying off a bribe to Chinese officials is just yet another example of how China has infiltrated into American businesses and also bought off some of our politicians. We know this, especially with the Biden family, thanks to what was revealed as a result of the Hunter Biden laptop. Hunter Biden's business partner got a $3 million wire transfer from China, and some of it went to Hunter himself and to Hunter's daughter and to Joe Biden's brother. This was something that came out just a few weeks ago. Also, we know that Hunter had a meeting with a Chinese energy tycoon while President Biden was a vice president in the Obama administration. This Chinese energy tycoon, like many other Chinese businessmen, had ties to the CCP. And then that same Chinese businessman that Hunter met with sent a 3-carat diamond to Hunter's hotel room. That is a bribe. Hunter Biden denied that this happened, of course, because he is a liar. And then once it was verified with the Hunter Biden laptop story, he had to admit to doing it. Another thing that came out is that there was an email exchange between Hunter, his business associate, and Yi Zhangming, who is a CCP-connected owner of a Chinese energy company, where Hunter Biden demanded that Mr. Zhangming pay him $10 million a year for, quote, introductions alone. That is, again, another example of improper business dealings with a high level, I mean, the second highest level politician's son being paid by a foreign government to make introductions. It's just unbelievable. Subsequent emails also proposed ownership stakes for each investor. And these emails said that 10% were going to go, quote, to the big guy. Hunter Biden's business partner, Tony Bublinski, who is a former naval officer, on the record with the Wall Street Journal, admitted that the quote-unquote big guy was, in fact, our now president, Joe Biden. And finally, there were remarks that were circulated around China and then suppressed in the United States dating back to November of 2020 after President Biden won the 2020 election. They were said by Di Dongsheng, who is a vice dean at the School of International Relations at Renmin University. He, again, like many other prominent professors and businessmen, has ties to the CCP. And he put out this statement where he said that the Trump administration was actually giving China a much harder time, and it was harder when Trump was in office to infiltrate into American society. But he says that now that Biden is elected, it is much easier for China to re-infiltrate into our politicians' lives and to buy them off. He said, quote, we have people at the top. We have our old friends who are at the top of America's core inner circle of power and influence. My God. During the U.S.-China trade war, that is with Trump slapping on tariffs with China, they, i.e. these friends that were trying to infiltrate into American society, they tried to help. And I know that my friends on the U.S. side told me that they tried to help, but they couldn't do much, i.e. because Trump was so disciplined and powerful with squashing China. But now that we're seeing that Biden is elected, the traditional elite, the political elite, the establishment, they're very close to Wall Street. Biden's son has some sort of global foundation. Who helped him build those foundations? Get it? There's a lot of deals we have on the inside. A top Chinese man with ties to the CCP is admitting that he is paying people to go in and buy off the Biden family. And China was happy when President Biden won in November of 2020 because they viewed it as easier to manipulate him. And finally, I play this clip a lot when I'm talking about President Biden in China, but it cannot be played too many times. Let's hear about what President Biden said about the threat that China poses to us.
China is going to eat our lunch? Come on, man. They can't even figure out how to deal with the fact that they have this great division between the China Sea and the mountains in the east, I mean, in the west. They can't figure out how they're going to deal with the corruption that exists within the system. I mean, they're not bad folks, but guess what? They're not competition for us.
Speaking of China, the Chinese government has come out and responded to reports that the president of Taiwan is visiting the United States this week and meeting with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. The president of Taiwan is Tsai Ing-wen. She's actually the first female to run the country, and she is due to depart today for a trip to Guatemala and Belize, where she will transit through New York and Los Angeles. She's expected to meet, as I said, with U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy while she is in California. Ever since Chiang Kai-shek and the Nationalist Party of China declared their control of Taiwan in 1949 after losing the Chinese Civil War, the United States has pledged to defend Taiwan against Chinese communist encroachment and aggression. Of course, China has affirmed since the 1949 Civil War that Taiwan is a part of China. It is not a separate country or a separate government. But really, for much of recent Chinese history, they have not been powerful enough to actually take steps against Taiwan. Unfortunately, we know that that has changed over the last decade, especially as Xi Jinping, the dictatorial president of China, has come to power and vastly increased China's military, economic influence, and global influence everywhere. Last August, so August of 2022, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan. Then a Chinese government official said that it was provocative. And a spokesperson for China's Taiwan Affairs Office said yesterday, quote, "If this Taiwan president that is visiting the United States has any contact with U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, it will be another provocation that seriously violates the One China principle, harms China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, and destroys peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. We firmly oppose this." Again, this is a spokesperson for China. "We firmly oppose this, and we will definitely take measures to resolutely fight back." As mentioned, over the past few years, and especially over the past few months, China has stepped up the ante with regard to its rhetoric pertaining to wanting to reunify Taiwan with what is called, or what they call, the Chinese motherland. For instance, in October of last year, at the 20th Party Congress, Xi Jinping said, quote, "We insist on striving for the prospect of peaceful reunification with the greatest sincerity and best efforts with Taiwan. But we will never promise to give up the use of force and reverse the option to, and reserve, excuse me, the option to take all necessary measures. Reunification of the motherland must be achieved," he proclaimed. "It must be achieved." In January, just a few months ago, China sent 71 Air Force aircrafts, including fighter jets and drones, into Taiwanese airspace, and they said that they conducted these quote-unquote strike drills in response to the provocation from Taiwan and the United States. Again, it is unclear what the grave provocation is, though China does view the Taiwanese president visiting the United States as such. President Biden has affirmed the United States' commitment to Taiwan, repeating in September of 2022, "Yes, that is the commitment we made." He sent 100, not 100,000, not 1,000, just 100 more troops to Taiwan to help with their military efforts. President Biden also negotiated a deal with the Philippines to let American military forces use Filipino military bases. But overall, we have really been diminished in our capacity to help Taiwan should China invade. I actually wrote about this a few weeks ago in the American Spectator. I'll link the link of that article that I wrote down below. The Pentagon announced at the end of last year that China officially has more intercontinental ballistic missile launchers than the United States. Also, the U.S. Congress published a report at the end of last year that sometime between 2015 and 2020, the Chinese Navy surpassed the United States Navy in battleships. We, the United States, also retired two F-15 fighter jets from bases in Japan, which would obviously have been very helpful if China invades Taiwan, since we would have those fighter jets right nearby in Japan to come to Taiwan's aid. And also, if you just look at the American track record with regard to foreign policy in the past half century, it does not seem likely, given that track record, that we would follow through on our promise to defend Taiwan from China. Look at what happened in Vietnam or in Iraq or in Afghanistan, or as much as I hate to say it, what's going on in Ukraine right now. We go into these countries or we pledge to support them, and maybe we will stay for a little while and have some success in defending them against enemies, but then we get tired and leave. So again, if we continue with the track record that we have had so far with foreign relations, even if our military capabilities haven't been diminished, which I just showed you that they have, we still seem to get tired and leave, and perhaps we will not stay in it with Taiwan for the long haul. And finally, the last news story I'll tell you today pertains to domestic news, and specifically with this Chicago mayoral race. On April 4th, there is going to be a runoff between two candidates that I'm going to tell you about. Should be very interesting to see the results of this. The current mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, lost her bid for a second term in a decisive defeat earlier this month. She became the first mayor of Chicago in 40 years to lose re-election. So since she lost earlier this month, only two candidates advanced to the runoff that will take place on April 4th, but it is pretty damning in a very clear referendum on Mayor Lightfoot's track record that she didn't even make it to that runoff round, which we are now seeing. Ms. Lightfoot served as the mayor of Chicago since 2019. She was the first black woman to be elected mayor, as well as the first, quote unquote, openly gay person, as the New York Times put it. I have to laugh at that. It's so funny. Openly gay person, sort of shady. The New York Times is implying, or at least putting the suggestion out there, that there may have been gay mayors of Chicago in the past, but not openly. We all know that Chicago has suffered from terrible violent crime under Mayor Lightfoot's time in office, and it is not uncommon for as many as 50 people to be shot in Chicago in one weekend. In addition to being quote-unquote soft on crime, Mayor Lightfoot has been criticized for a spat that she had with the Teachers Union of Chicago, which led to an 11-day strike where thousands of Chicago public school students did not attend school. Also, Chicago had high unemployment during the lockdowns of the COVID-19 pandemic that she oversaw and enforced. And of course, unfortunately, like many other Democratic politicians, she's been criticized for her hypocrisy, especially pertaining to COVID-19. While she was in charge of inflicting these draconian lockdowns on the city of Chicago, in August of 2021, she was in Hyannisport, Massachusetts, officiating an unmasked wedding of RFK's grandson, again, while her city back in Chicago remained on lockdown. So again, with Mayor Lightfoot off of the ballot, two candidates advance to this April 4th runoff. Let's take a look at both of them. Both of them are Democrats. Democrat mayors have run Chicago since 1931, but Moore seems to have sort of Republican political leanings and tendencies, and the other one seems to be an avowed Democrat progressive. Paul Vallas is a white moderate. He is a former public schools executive, and he has been endorsed by the Chicago Police Union. He was the one who I was referring to as probably having more Republican leanings, though it is strategically smart of him to not list himself as a Republican, because a lot of voters would just immediately write him off if they saw that R next to his name instead of the D for Democrat. He has campaigned on giving school choice to low-income families in Chicago, and he has also run primarily on reducing crime, since crime is such a big problem in Chicago. And he has also said that he wants to add 700 new police officers to the Chicago PD. That's the first candidate. The second candidate is Brandon Johnson. He is a black progressive. He is the county board commissioner of Chicago, and he has been endorsed by the teachers union. He opposes charter schools, and he has called for cutting the police budget by $150 million. It is a tight race between these two men. And what's very interesting about Chicago is that it is really divided pretty starkly among racial lines. It is the third largest city in the United States. It has a third black population, a third of it has a white population, and then the remaining third is Hispanic. 80% of the murder victims in Chicago are black. So if you look at the data, it would seem to make more sense for people to vote for Paul Vallis, who is running on reducing crime and adding more police officers, instead of Brandon Johnson, who wants to cut police budgets and reduce the number of officers. But still, obviously, a lot of black Americans, especially in Chicago, have mistrust of the police. So that could swing into Brandon Johnson's favor. Though also, if you look at what has gone on with regard to education, it also seems to be to make more sense for Chicago voters to go with Paul Vallis, since he is pro giving a school choice to low-income families. In the Illinois State Board of Education, they have released a report that only 11% of black students and 17% of Hispanic students in Chicago public schools could read at a grade level in 2021. That is pretty amazing. We will keep you updated on what happens with this race. Again, it is right now kind of split down the middle, and it will be very interesting to see what they choose. Just a reminder again before we depart, please do consider subscribing to this channel and also liking and commenting. You can follow me at Julie R. Hartman and check out some of my timeless videos, especially the one today about handwriting. Take care.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.